The Tongass National Forest in southeastern Alaska is the last great temperate rainforest in the Americas. Long embroiled in debate over logging, the Tongass is in the midst of wrenching change. Demand for timber is shrinking, and Alaskans are trying to define a new role for the forest. NPR's Christopher Joyce visited the Tongass and prepared this NPR National Geographic radio expedition.
Nature never conceded defeat in the city of Juneau. Whales breach along the waterfront and bald eagles quarrel in backyards. People plan their days around the tides and the weather, their only gesture of protest to paint their houses in parakeet colors to hold off the rainy sky. That rain and the gravelly soil left behind by ancient glaciers are what created the Tongass National Forest. It's 17 million acres and swallows up southeastern Alaska. But the Tongass is hardly monolithic. Protected old growth butts up against logged clear cuts, and the state, private companies, and Native Americans all share rights to it. The patch we visit lies along the Switzer Creek Trail, just outside Juneau. Wildlife biologist John Shane knows the place well.
We're right on the edge of this old growth with a stream running through it, and looking up from ground level, you have a shrub layer, you've got logs with its own microhabitat of small mammals and insects and fungi, and you look up and you see the ragged canopy of this forest, and in an old growth forest you get this tremendous amount of sidelight coming through.
These are living canyons of spruce, hemlock, and cedar, here before the 1600s. But old growth is more than just age, it's variety. Saplings next to 200-foot giants, berry bushes where dead trees have fallen. In the summer, the bear and deer and other mammals feed on the shrubs. In the winter, the big trees intercept snow and animals feed underneath them. Shane drops to his knees to show how.
This is just the forest duff layer. The organic soil in the forest is very thin. And many of these plants have underground stems or rhizomes. So they're branching out and you have these great carpets of bunchberry, ground dogwood, trailing raspberry, and gold thread.
You can stick your fingers way down in here and I can feel a mass of all sorts of roots underneath there.
That's right. And in the wintertime, when there's snow on the ground and the deer have a hard time finding food, they move around the bases of the large trees and they feed on these little green plants, and these provide very important winter nutrition.
Diversity is what makes old growth the best place for wildlife. But farther along the Switzer Trail, the trees close in on us. Here, the old growth was cut. The new second growth trees all grew in at the same time, as uniform as a platoon of robots. Now their tent-like canopies have knit together, and they blot out the sun. It's not much good for wildlife.
You can see why. If you were walking through here as a deer, you would have to carry a sack lunch if you wanted to eat something. Virtually, there's nothing here for a deer to eat. This is essentially growing trees. It's not a forest.
What is good forest and what isn't? That question has become a big part of the debate over the Tongass. Though maps of the Tongass show mostly green, less than half is forested, and only 4% of that is the kind of old growth that's best for wildlife and for logging. Cutting down old growth has sustained many of the people who live in the Tongass, people like Steve Seeley. Seeley was raised in a logging camp. He now runs his family's sawmill, a short boat ride across the channel from the town of Ketchikan.
This center over here is our log merchandising line. The log comes in on the deck, and first thing we do is run it through the barker, remove all the bark, any rock that's embedded in the outside, dirt. And we bring that log, transfers down the chain, comes across to this bucksaw.
Timber isn't what it used to be here. Logging allotments on federal lands have been cut almost by half, and logging on private land is down as well. The pulp mill in Ketchikan recently closed, and hundreds of jobs were lost.
I think the part of industry that's left operating today is a victim of right-wing industry folks who say, push the harvest levels on the Tongass back to 500 million board feet a year. And extremists on the environmental side who say don't cut anything.
Seely says he'd like to cut just the newer trees and save more old growth to make the forest a truly renewable resource. But he says he can't do that yet.
We don't have enough young growth at this point in time, enough second growth. It's only been really any kind of a major timber harvest since the late 1950s. It just hasn't had a chance to grow back.
So some demand for old growth remains, and the debate continues. How much of it can be cut without strangling Alaska's wildlife? And as timber jobs evaporate, what will replace them?
I'm going to tell you about chief poles, commemoration poles, ridicule poles, and memorial poles.
We're in the village of Saxman, just outside Ketchikan, the site of a totem pole park and a Tlingit meeting house. Every 20 minutes, a new busload of vacationers gets a guided tour. Like many of the guides here, Patrick Isaacs is Native American, Tlingit and Haida. Isaacs says logging made many Native Americans wealthy, but it wiped out fish and game, too. Tourism is easier on the land, he says, but it, too, has its price.
The downside is, well, with the tourism industry right here in Saxman, me being a local native, I can't even go into my longhouse, nor can I go into our community house. I'm very spiritual, and it disturbs my spirit very much that I cannot go into these places here that the other people have priority over.
Souvenir shops have replaced loggers' saloons. Cruise ships follow whales along the inlets. There's even a new word in the local vocabulary, the view shed. That's everything you can see from a passing boat. Usually that means glaciers, whales, and maybe a bear or two. Some Alaskans say that's not enough to save the real heart of the Tongass, its biggest trees.
I call these trees standing capital. They may be worth more left standing to be visited.
Sam Skaggs is an inventor, a fisherman, a boat captain, an investment counselor, and most of all, a dreamer. He says the best way to preserve old growth is to get tourists beyond the view shed, back into the woods to see the really big stuff, what he calls the landmark trees.
I think a landmark tree forest is deserving of the same status as a destination to come and see some of these incredible cathedral-like stands of trees that are left in the Tongass. You walk into them and it's a transforming type of experience. These are old souls, 400, 500-year-old living statues, if you will.
Skaggs and a small band of like-minded adventurers use aerial and satellite photos to locate these giant trees. They load supplies onto his 30-foot aluminum boat and motor as close as they can get. Then they hike, no matter how rugged the terrain, to find the landmark trees, to map and measure them, and to show anyone who'll come along what the Tongass once looked like. For Radio Expeditions, this is Christopher Joyce, NPR News.